is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. For over a century, the United Way of Greater Cincinnati has been pivotal in shaping the community. On the one hand, it is responsible for raising the financial resources, $60 million last year, that help fund many critical not-for-profit organizations in the community. On the other hand, it is responsible for overseeing the way those funds are invested to make sure the greatest impact is created. Last month, Michael Johnson assumed the role of president and CEO of the United Way of Greater Cincinnati, taking over from Rob Reifschneider after 17 years in that role. We are joined today by Michael Johnson and also the Senior Vice President and Chief Impact Officer of the United Way of Greater Cincinnati, Ross Meyer. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We are also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition. Michael, welcome to Cincinnati.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having
well,
us.
Well, you've been here for what, 6 weeks now, on the job for 6 weeks?
34 days.
Well, you've got everything figured out, I'm sure. So
34 days, and this is my 21st meeting.
Wow.
In 34 days.
So, well, okay, you've been meeting then clearly with lots of people.
A lot of people.
What's your strategy there?
I think part of it is seeking understanding instead of being understood. I'm not from Cincinnati. I moved here from Wisconsin. And I think I understand what the issues are, but I want to hear directly from the people. I want to hear from grassroots community leaders. I want to hear from teachers and principals and educators. I want to hear from the business community. So I think it's important that we service three counties. We want to be visible in all 10 of those counties, hearing from our constituents and understanding what the issue is before we act.
Well, you know, you sort of got some publicity, some attention for the fact that you went down and sat down and just talked to the people in the 3rd Street homeless camp.
Yeah.
That I'm sure wasn't on your schedule exactly.
It was not.
So why'd you do that and what'd you get out of it?
So for me, it was I went out there 5:45 in the morning and I just wanted to understand directly from the people that were living out there, why they were out there. And so I just kind of threw on some shorts. I had a raggedy T-shirt on, and I just went out there. And I think what I got out of, I met this guy by the name of Papa Smurf. And Papa Smurf shared with me why he was there, why his daughter was there. They took me and people from Ross's team. We went back later that afternoon and walked the 4 blocks, and they gave us a tour and introduced us to every person that was living there. So for me, it was to understand how they got to that situation, to understand from them what the potential, what the gaps are that they see, but to also communicate that message to the business community and the partners that we fund to figure out what the issues were. So for me, being the leader of United Way, I don't want to be a leader that's known for sitting behind a desk. I want to be known for being active in the community and being out in the community and understanding what those issues are. And I got an opportunity to talk to the city, the people that were living out there, and some of the business owners on 3rd Street. And it was a way for me to educate myself on those issues.
Well, do you think, and maybe that's, you know, that was a way for you to educate yourself on those issues. Mm-hmm. Do you think you gained any insight that may help the community figure out how to deal with this? Because this issue just keeps going on in a way that it hasn't in past years. I mean, it's sort of blown up this summer. It's not that camps haven't formed in the past and been dispersed in the past, but something's different this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly some, I think, some gaps. And I wouldn't necessarily say gaps in services. I think there's an issue with communication between some of our providers and the people that live there. So, for example, some of the folks there want services to come directly to them. But I also heard from the other side that if we do too much of that, people will continue to live out there. And so I think what I do know, and I said this to my team, I said, if you move those folks off 3rd Street, they're just going to move close into the neighborhoods. And part of their economic engine, from what they shared with me, is, hey, people bring us food. People bring us tents down here. We make money by panhandling, and we make $30 to $40 a day. And so I do think there could be a potential solution. In Madison, if you Google, there's a video where I went homeless with a local businessman for 3 days, and we did it undercover to build some awareness around what children and families were facing around this issue. We raised a significant amount of money by building awareness to it, but we also ended up building a homeless day center. So people who were homeless had a place to go during the day. And in Wisconsin, there's this huge section where people can congregate during the day. They can go inside and get critical services, look for employment opportunities, see a healthcare provider. And I don't know if that's the if that's the outcome, but I think as we begin and continue to have conversations with our partners, I think we need to understand both sides of the equation.
Ross, you've been with United Way for some time locally. Is this a different approach than you're used to?
You know, I think one thing that's most exciting for all of us at United Way about Michael's leadership is he's really bringing to life what we all so deeply believe in, that our role is really to unite our community to make change. And Michael lives that. And he shows up and represents the mission of United Way in a way that is refreshing and energizing. And really, by the fact that, as he shared with you, the 221 meetings that he's had in a short time with us, with all components of our community, every, you know, from the boardrooms to the streets, right? Literally, that is the unique role that United Way plays, sitting in the middle of pulling all of those people together from all of those sectors to create change. And Michael's, the time he's spending, the relationships he's building, the listening, importantly, that he is doing, is a representation of what we all believe in deeply, how we make change in our community. And it's very refreshing.
Michael, in all of those meetings and the experiences you had so far, how does Cincinnati strike you? Does it strike you as very similar to what you're, no, even though you're not from here, very similar to what you've experienced in your past, or somewhat fundamentally different, or what's it strike you as?
So I'll tell you, so far, again, it's only been 34 days. I see so many similarities to Madison, Wisconsin. In that community, I would say I served as a bridge builder, but I also was a rebel rouser. So I was respected. The local gang leaders knew who I was. The CEOs at the top, I can go in any setting and talk to anybody because we built relationships with all those different communities. So when there was a crisis in our community, our organization and myself was somebody that could bring people together. I would tell you this community feels no different. Now, the only thing I've heard is, hey, this market is a little bit more conservative than the liberal market that you're coming from in Madison. So I was somebody who did not have a problem speaking up on social justice issues. I was also somebody who didn't have a problem working with the police department, but also didn't have a problem working with grassroots community leaders around conversations that impacted children and families who needed our collective leadership the most. And so I got to figure out what my voice is going to be here. But I did tell the board when they hired me, I said, you may want to do a Google search and make sure that I'm your guy. And they did a thorough search. I think we came to an understanding in terms of, you know, how we collectively do this work. At the end of the day, I'm hoping in 10 years that we will fundamentally change the lives of thousands and thousands of people in this region. I'm going to try to earn the right to sit in this chair every single day.
Well, you know, you don't come directly from United Way management.
Not at all.
Which is where a lot of present CEOs of significant size, United Way, they come up through the ranks of smaller organizations. You don't come from that background. What is it in your personal background that and work background that you think equips you for this job?
Great question. I was one of the top fundraisers in Boys and Girls Clubs of America. Grew our local Boys and Girls Club organizations from one of the, I would say, one of the bottom tiered organizations to being one of the fastest growing Boys and Girls Club organizations in the country. If you look at our work in Madison, Wisconsin, we put together a dynamic educational program that helped to close the opportunity gap for low-income kids of color and poor white kids. And it is validated through third-party research through the University of Wisconsin. I've chaired the United Way campaign. I'm a benefactor of United Way. I grew up in the projects in Chicago. I'm one of only a few kids in my elementary school to still be alive. I'm here today because of United Way and its partner agencies. I was a member of Boys and Girls Clubs, a program that was funded by United Way. We're the largest contributor of Boys and Girls Clubs here in Cincinnati. A mentor of mine came through a program called Big Brothers and Big Sisters. My mother, who has schizophrenia, received services from a United Way, you know, partner agency. And I've spent my last 20 years working with business leaders, community leaders, and both the public and the private sector to get to this point. I will also say that I understand the business acumen of this work. I have an MBA, a bachelor's degree. I went to the number one philanthropy school in the country. And Indiana University, okay. Center of Philanthropy. And so I have experience raising money. I understand budgets. I know how to do budget projections. I know how to put together business plans. And I have a track record of success.
Okay. So that sort of cross-section of skills and on somewhat very personal level growing up, but also professionally and what you do. And if I'm correct, as I sort of searched around, your wife does have a connection with United Way, right? Up in Dane County?
Yeah. My wife is...
So it's not like you haven't heard of the organization.
My wife spent 10 years with the United Way in Philadelphia and also with the United Way in Dane County. So we were always almost talking about United Way anyway. And I was the most sought-out speaker for the United Way in our community. So I spoke at hundreds of United Way campaigns and served as the chair of their government and a nonprofit division of their campaign.
Yeah, I don't think you're shy.
Just a little bit.
Okay. You know, before we get into the campaign side of this, Ross, one of the things you've been focused on a lot in the last few years, this whole question of childhood family poverty initiative. Where do we stand? And then I want Michael's sort of perspective on where we're going.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. I mean, we all know, child poverty is the single, we believe, biggest challenge that our community, not just our city, but our community is facing, right? I mean, when one in three kids in our region are growing up in families that struggle to make ends meet, and that reality hasn't fundamentally changed in decades, we believe it's the underlying challenge that we have to unite our community around tackling. The Child Poverty Collaborative that we've been a close partner in since its inception has really inspired a lot of leadership and grassroots leaders in our community to see their role in this work. It's led to a lot of inspiration in how United Way has decided to really focus our effort and our partners on not just meeting the needs of the people of our community, but actually moving them on a path out of poverty, which is a fundamental change in United Way's approach. And that was largely inspired by a lot of the momentum and will building that the Child Poverty Collaborative helped inspire. A lot of work also with our business community, really understanding the role that our employers can play in providing better job opportunities for people. The Child Poverty Collaborative has inspired a lot of critical momentum. Now, we're at a stage now with, unfortunately, Karen having to
Bankston,
step back.
Who is very well known in this community.
Absolutely. She's a dear friend of ours, and she's, for health reasons, decided to step back into a consulting role. She's going to stay very close with Michael and me and helping us form our work and our strategy. But it's also affording us and the leadership of the Child Poverty Collaborative to really think about how do we build on the work of the past 3 years and really propel it to the next level. So we're taking some time to really chart that course going forward.
And Michael, you came in 34 days ago.
Yeah.
And okay, here's an initiative that has been going on. And in fact, if you look at the survey data, I think on this particular question, attitudes in this community have really changed in ways that attitudes on lots of other things never seem to change.
Yeah.
So what's your perspective on this?
I think people are hungry for us to lay out an action plan. around this work. So we're starting to have those conversations. I know some people will probably be skeptical to say, hey, you know, poverty is going to always be around. It's been around for a very, very long time. But I think this community is large enough, but also smart enough, and there's enough thought partners and leaders that can help us address these issues. So we're going to look at the work that we're doing with the Child Poverty Collaborative. We're going to look at evidence-based practices. We're going to allow the data and the research drive how we do this work, but also look at a mechanism to look at how someone evaluate the work that we're doing to make sure that if we're going to raise the kind of resources that we want to raise over the next 5 years, what's the economic impact and the return, you know, on that investment. So over the next 60 days, I'll be spending more time in the community, some time internally to lay out a SWOT analysis, to build a business case for our work moving forward, then to get some additional buy-in from the community, and then also get some short-term victories. I don't think it's going to take us a year or two to plan. We don't have it's too many kids. With 1 in 3 kids living in poverty, unacceptable. With 600,000 people in this region, given the wealth that we have in this region, it's unacceptable. And I think while we want to eradicate it, I think we can help reduce it.
Do you believe that a local community can buck national trends? Because the national trends for the last 35 years has been to expand the income gap.
Yeah.
And people at the lower end of that income gap haven't experienced much wage development,
yeah.
Income development.
Yeah.
Can a local community change, or are we just part of the bigger picture?
Yeah. I think we got to always be willing to buck against the system. And so we had an event called Inclusive Capitalism. How do we include low wage workers and people at the bottom of that chart? How do we include them into capitalism? I think if the business community and if our region say that that's a priority and we work collectively around that and we put a strategy around it, I'm optimistic. I would tell you at United Way, it's our number one BHAG. It's our big, hairy, audacious goal, and we're going to align strategies around those goals. And we're going to try to – and it's going to make people uncomfortable because now we're going to say our funding is not going to be tied to performance and measurement. And it's going to be validated through an evaluation process supported by the University of Cincinnati. And so it's going to look a little bit differently, and I think it's going to make some people comfortable. And in a few months, I might not be the most well-liked guy in this city. But at the end of the day, I think we have to be willing to sit in a seat of discomfort to move the kind of needle that we need to move.
Well, I think it's fair to say that when all of this really started to gear up 3 years ago, that some people raise the question, well, why did we end up in this situation? Mm-hmm. Why did we end up in the as the second worst or the fourth worst or whatever the data says, and it depends on what data set you're looking at.
Yeah.
Has United Way not been doing its job?
Yeah, yeah. So I would say I've heard the same thing. When you look at the money that we raise, there's this perception that $60 million goes back into the community. When you look at some of the national campaigns that we run, some of that money is pass-through dollars that do go to other communities. Now, have we done great work? Yes, our partner agencies have. Have we been very strategic around aligning what that work should be around poverty? I don't think we have. Our board has said moving forward that this is going to be our number one agenda. And that's what we're going to focus on. That's what we're going to align our funding around. And we're going to raise as much resources to – and I'm going to in the next few weeks, I'm going to lay out how much money we've raised historically and what those trends are and then what our projections are moving forward and what stays in this community and what we think are going to go outside of this community.
Dan, let me jump sure. jump in on this because I think it's critical to understand how – transformational this shift is for United Way. For 100 years, our United Ways around the country have been largely the safety net. And our boards and our leadership's decision to say that's not good enough anymore. providing for and meeting the needs of our, the most vulnerable in our community is important, but we need to go beyond that and actually help not just meet the immediate need, not just provide the mental health service or the after-school program or the job training program, because we know the lives of families in poverty are complex, and it's never just one of those issues. It's many compounding right. factors together. But we have the opportunity to bring together what we believe are some of the best-in-class agencies in the country that provide excellent services into a network of 100 organizations that can really wrap support around families and move them on a path out of poverty, not just managing their situation and meeting a need here or there, but actually moving them on a path out of poverty. That's a fundamental shift, and it's actually a fundamental shift different from many of our peer United Ways around the country.
We're the only United Way in the country right now saying that this is our number one priority, the only one.
Do you feel like, you know, you were saying needs to be data-driven, that the organizations you work with are giving you the data that will allow you to make the decisions that need to be made?
I think they've done great work. I think we have to do a better job being clear on what our expectations are and what we want to measure. And United Way has to own that.
Well, you kicked off the annual campaign this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And how's it going to be different this year than in the past?
You know, we're in 10 counties. We can't just have one big kickoff in Hamilton County. So this year we're going to all 10 counties. We're showing up in restaurants. We're showing up in bars. We're showing up in local neighborhood
evening things. No,
hey, some might be even some are Saturdays, and so we're going to show up and ask people to come out. We want to meet them. We want to share with them what, you know, our plans are. But we also want to hear if there's constructive feedback they want to give. Give it to us. We truly want to hear it. And then ultimately at the end, I'm going to take all of the information that we've collected and say, here's what I've learned over my 100th day. Here's what I've learned. And let that be a part of our kickoff of our campaign moving forward. We don't want this $60 million number. We don't want to be known for raising $60 million. Now, we want to raise those kinds of resources. We want to be known for our impact. And that's what we're going to start focusing on. And that's going to be a part of our business strategy moving forward.
Well, you know, I raised the questions in my introduction to this section about the model that United Way has used for a long time, and that's the workplace model. In an economy that's increasingly a gig economy with lots of contractors coming in and out, harder to, you know, fewer people working for those big corporations. How viable is that model, and what can you do to adjust it?
Yeah, I think we got to look at funding diversification. So I think we got to look at your traditional workplace campaigns, but how do you supplement that with grant funding opportunities and looking at all of the grant opportunities that exist throughout the tri-state area to support our partner agencies. I think we can also look at opportunities around calls marketing. You know, I've raised millions of dollars in Madison, partnering with organizations like Oscar Mayer, Fiskars, and doing calls marketing projects. But I think we got to also raise money year-round.
What do you mean by that?
So for example, there's a box of Kleenex right here that's on your table. Putting the United Way logo on there, a lot of customers, there's research out there that say that when customers know that a corporation is tied to some sort of social responsibility campaign, that their sales would generally go up. And so I negotiated a multi-million-dollar deal with Oscar Mayer, a company called Fiskars, Van Houten Pickles that sell millions and millions of pickles every single year. A cost marketing campaign could be a local gas station where they may ask people, hey, if you spend 75 cents, can you round it up to a dollar to support your local United Way and its partner agencies? You can raise a ton of money that way. Diversification is critical. It's just like in business. If they sold one product and that product no longer so they would go out of business. I think when we look at philanthropy in this country, you have to have a strong presence on individual giving. 4 out of 5 philanthropic dollars in the United States come from individuals. Right now, we have about 90,000 donors in the tri-state area. I think we can get to 150,000 if we begin to focus on individuals. Now, a lot of those individuals do come from the corporations, but there's a lot of mid-sized companies that don't necessarily support the work that we do at United Way because we haven't taken the time to ask them. So diversification is critical.
It's hard to get out to those mid-sized, smaller companies, and as more entrepreneurial startups are out there, that all of that becomes problematic. How do you get to people? Now, what you're saying is United Way has a brand value that can be marketed like anything else.
Absolutely. And then I think we got to be relevant, and we got to be – and let me tell you, in Wisconsin, I think some of the best deals I got because people saw we were vocal. People saw that we were active in the community. Like just this morning, I met with Preston Scott's Family Foundation, you know, and his mother. I just happened to meet her at an event on Saturday. And Preston wants to – his foundation wants to give back to the community. So we just had lunch 10 minutes before I came over here about what those possibilities can look like. And his mother follows me on social media, and she's like, God, I love what you're doing with United Way. So some of those things I think will organically happen if we're doing the work and we're doing it the right way, but some of it has to be strategic.
If you're a fundraiser, you can't be shy.
Yeah, you can't. You can't at all.
Well, first off, Michael Johnson, welcome to Cincinnati. It's going to be fun to watch how you develop this whole thing. Ross Meyer, great to have you here today and for all the work you've been doing over the years with all these initiatives that have been out there. So I look forward to working with both of you in the future.
Well, we appreciate you having on. Ross is a critical part of this team, and we're going to do our best every single day to do what we can for this community.
I can't ask anymore. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.